scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguila's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Well, it is a busy Monday around the NHL, one day before free agency. Do we have a lot to get into this hour on Flames Talk? It is Monday, June 30th, 2025. It's Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. And boy, do we have a lot to dive into. What's happening with Rasmus Anderson and the Flames? We will get there with Frank Saravalli very shortly, but we might as well get to the news of the day on this, or one of the latest big piece of news of the day on this Monday. It's time to say hello to Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com, usually on Tuesdays, but this week on a Monday, because Tuesday's free agency day. Let's say hello to Frank Saravalli from Daily Faceoff, dailyfaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Frank, let's first of all say hello. Thank you, as always. Good to hear from you. Mitch Marner to the Vegas Golden Knights. Trade is done with the Toronto Maple Leafs. And now a brand new contract extension as well. 8 years times $12 million, as reported by you on Twitter. $96 million overall. Tell us about Mitch Marner and the Toronto Maple Leafs swinging that deal with the Vegas Golden Knights.
Well, to be totally fair, the trade itself has not actually happened yet and is not done. So as of this minute, if you're listening live, they're still working on the exact terms of what that trade looks like, and the trade call has not happened, but the contract has been agreed to. 8 years times $12 million, the Leafs are the only team that could sign him to that deal. And that they did it in conjunction with the Golden Knights, who will then acquire him via trade, and that'll be a done deal. Mitch Marner, newest Vegas Golden Knight, and also take a lot of steam out of the interest of July 1, to be honest. It's now become the Nikolai Ehlers, Mikael Granlund sweepstakes.
Yeah, for sure. And it felt like, it's felt like for months, or at least weeks, like Vegas and Mitch Marner was always going to be the marriage. It has felt for quite some time like Kelly McCrimmon, the GM of the Vegas Golden Knights, was going to find a way to land another one of the biggest names in the NHL, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, once you could begin to piece everything together from the trade talks that fell apart last summer to, again, Marner potentially being interested in going to Vegas in March at the deadline, and nearly a three-way deal happening with Mikko Rantanen and going to Toronto. This, it kind of felt inevitable, and then you see the Alex Pietrangelo news yesterday about needing multiple surgeries and likely to miss the entire season, and you go, oh, okay, there's the cap space required for the Golden Knights to get a deal like this done, and sure enough, it materializes.
Okay, so what does that mean now for Toronto, as they have a significant amount of money coming off the cap entering free agency on Tuesday?
Well, it means that they're going to be active, right? I mean, they've got a lot of holes to fill, particularly up front, and it's not impossible to do so. I mean, you're talking about a 100-point player who's obviously a gifted producer, but now with that cap space, could the Leafs go out and get two $6 million players? Could they go out and get three $4 million players? It's just a different way to think about building your team. And that's when Brad Treliving talks about changing the DNA of the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's certainly part of it too.
Okay, so that is the situation in Toronto, Vegas, Mitch Marner. That has been agreed upon on this Monday. It's Frank Saravalli's with us. Here's the latest that I've heard on Rasmus Anderson and the Flames and what's happening in that situation. Curious if it kind of links up with what you're hearing, but Feels like there's been interest from teams over the last little while. Feels like teams have made inquiries, made offers, but a contract extension. And right now, Rasmus not being ready to extend in some of these places has held things up, and the Flames aren't going to force it. There's still not urgency on making sure it happens if they're not going to get the return they believe is commensurate for them. That's kind of where it feels like it's, and the Flames are willing, very willing, as we've said all along, to go into the season with Rasmus on the roster. Feels like contract extension is kind of the halt or the roadblock right now. Is that consistent with kind of where you understand things are right now?
Yeah, I mean, it always is, right? So that's always what it comes down to. Look, this is a significant transaction, not only for all the reasons that we've talked about for the last few months for the Flames to get it right, but it's a significant transaction for anyone going out to get Rasmus Anderson, because you have the acquisition cost, which is that part is still to be sorted out, plus the extension that then follows it if you're planning to keep him. So there's a lot of different things that go into that. There's something called tagging space, which teams are going to have to be aware of, even with the cap increasing. There's like many layers to it on top of just saying, hey, we're going to trade you X and you give us Rasmus Anderson. That's not as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's been plenty of interest. The Golden Knights are one of those teams, not shockingly, that's been involved. The Dallas Stars, I believe, have engaged in multiple conversations with the Calgary Flames, mm-hmm. but I think there's others. You know, the willingness and interest in Anderson's part to then sign an extension after the fact. Like, look, we're in a likely world now that the Florida Panthers can re-sign Ekblad. They've re-signed Ekblad. They've re-signed Bennett. Now they're closing in on signing Marchand, believe it or not. Hmm. And all of a sudden, I don't know, if you were a team like the Toronto Maple Leafs that was trying to get either Marchand or Ekblad, and you get neither, do you now circle back to Calgary and try and make a deal for Anderson and a guy that you know?
Right.
There's what about the Detroit Red Wings? They really wanted to get their hands on Aaron Ekblad. They didn't get him. Do they turn around and now enter the conversation for Rasmus Anderson? If the New York Rangers don't get Vladislav Gavrikov, and the Kings and Gavrikov's camp have been grinding today, I don't think they're going to get to a deal. And in fact, it's more likely than not that Gavrikov's rights could be traded. There's another team involved, I think, or wants to be involved with Gavrikov that isn't the Rangers either. So all those things kind of compound the market, and there's a lot happening at one time.
And the thing that I think is really interesting on the Anderson front is I don't think this is a, at least the way I understand it, I don't think this is a scenario where we're talking about a guy saying, nope, I don't want to go there. Nope, I don't want to go there. I think we're talking about a guy who knows that he had a really down season, and knows that last year was one of his worst statistical years, and to sign now maybe isn't the best time to be extending, whether it's with the Flames or another team. And so I think that's why there's been a reticence, or at least part of why there's been a reticence for him to be extending with teams that are interested right now, because he wants to have a good season. He wants to bump his value. He wants to be on the Olympic team. And so if you're the Flames, maybe that's a way that you can get a little bit more value heading into the season.
Yeah, we've talked about that too, the idea that he bounces back and has a better year next year and is like far and away the clear best trade chip on the defense market in March. There's obviously risk and all sorts of things that go into carrying that last year. And my feeling would be in response to that, that this market is going to be so robust that he's going to have a real good table setter starting tomorrow to know what an extension might pay and put himself probably in a class above that, that makes it probably really enticing to sign.
Right. So still in your eyes, a chance that something gets done with Anderson this summer? good chance, so. Maybe?
I think there's still a chance that it happens this week.
Right. Which I think would, if you see social media with the Flames fans, I think they would be very happy if that were to happen, just based on some of the temperature that we're seeing around this particular topic in Calgary. Okay, that's the Rasmus Anderson front. Anything else you're tracking with the Flames heading into free agency on Tuesday? Anything else that you're hearing around the Flames heading into Tuesday?
Anything else that I'm hearing? Well, I'm curious about what happens on the backup goalie front. I think the Flames are, just checking my notes and counting the teams here, the Flames are one of 10 teams likely in the market to try and land a goalie. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of free agents available, but definitely none on the top end outside of maybe Jake Allen. I guess you could maybe throw Alex Lyon into that category. Mm-hmm. But that's the goalie market is probably somewhere where you see the Flames make a signing. And then outside of that, focus on goals. Where can they get goals? That's going to be one of the big quests for Craig Conroy. I just don't see him overspending to do it.
Yeah. Okay. Couple rapid-fire ones, then we'll let you bounce. 4 years, $42 million for Evan Bouchard in Edmonton. So $10.5 million on Evan Bouchard's extension with the Oilers. What do we make of the term, the dollar figure, everything? What was your reaction to that extension, Bouchard in Edmonton?
It's expensive, there's no doubt. But the truth is that Evan Bouchard had a massive arbitration case if they wanted to go that path, which is just a path to end up ultimately losing the player anyway. So I think what this is a sort of half measure. It's a deal that no one probably truly loves. Bouchard's camp is probably pretty happy with it, but still knowing that they couldn't, get an 8-year deal done, it was going to be too expensive, that I think this puts everyone in a spot where you kind of kick the can down the road a little bit. Not perfect. You've got $20 million now invested in just Evan Bouchard and Darnell Nurse next season, which is a huge chunk of the cap. But at least you're maintaining your 80-plus point defenseman and a guy that has done something that no one in the history of the game among defensemen has ever done with 23 points in back-to-back postseason. So not perfect, but Connor McDavid said, needs to get done, and it gets done.
Aaron Ekblad, you mentioned, stays. He signs a 8-year extension, just a touch over $6 million. Bennett already re-signed. You said the grinding away, Brad Marchand and the Panthers grinding away. How does Bill Zito keep getting away with this?
The benefit of
two Stanley Cups.
Income tax.
Yeah.
The benefit of two Stanley Cups, the benefit of an unbelievable practice facility where players ride their golf carts to, and it's 25 degrees Celsius in the winter. I mean, you take all those things and you smash them up. And I think for all these guys, it's not necessarily about every last dollar. I think every single one of them, whether it's Marchand or Bennett or certainly Ekblad, have left money on the table. And as I said earlier today on social media, we could all sit here and break out our calculators and try and figure out how on earth or how much did Aaron Ekblad give up to stay with the Panthers. And we could calculate it, but the calculation that I keep coming up with is that he just understands the value of happy and happiness. Like, he's a guy that will now crest $100 million in career earnings, has said before that he bleeds to be a Florida Panther. He was there through all of the lows and then got to experience the highs. All of that said, why mess with a good thing? Like, you could go chase the $8 or $9 million AAV, but if you're going to get another $48 million and be able to stay in your place, I mean, why not? And that's really what Bill Zito was able to prey on is not the no state income tax, which everyone wants to hit on. He was able to prey on the loyalty of guys who got to experience the game's ultimate thrill.
Okay, man, we'll let you go. I know you got a ton to get to and a ton that you're tracking the day before free agency. So we'll let you bounce, and we'll be following along with you on Tuesday and the rest of today on Monday. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate the time as always. Hey.
See you, Pat.
That is Frank Saravalli. He is our NHL insider, and he's brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pat Steinberg along with you. Let's say hello to Aaron Vickers as well of NHL.com and FC Hockey with us this week on Flames Talk as well. Hi, AB.
Sorry to disappoint. It's not a Wes Gilbertson experience this week.
I think that's next week.
But I don't even know that.
Up for debate. We'll sort it out later.
I just let you guys sort all that type stuff out. Of course, Vickers was riding shotgun with us as our draft expert for our full coverage of the 2025 NHL draft on Friday and Saturday. Was a lot of fun. Vix and the FC Hockey Guide was right there to help us out the entire way through. And the Flames add 8 new players to the organization as part of their class of 2025. And hey, we've got the breakdown with Vix. Go check out all of our comprehensive draft coverage. I think we had like 10, 11, 12 things that we popped onto the podcast feed over the weekend. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. You get Vickers breakdown of the draft class on the fly and to summarize as part of it. And let's continue to break down this draft class. It is always fun to say hello to our next guest. He is the content manager and prospects analyst over at Flow Hockey. It's Chris Peters who joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Chris, always a pleasure to chat. Appreciate the time. How are we doing today?
Well, you know, I think I could use a little more sleep, but aside from that, the draft's over, so I feel great. Feel great now.
Kind of like that post-Christmas hangover for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think hangover is a good word for it. Yeah.
Well, and I know that the prep for next year is probably already underway, but wanted to engage you and break down this class of 2025 for the Flames. As I mentioned, they had 7 picks. They make one additional deal to make it 8 selections when it's all said and done. And over at Flow Hockey, you gave Calgary's class of 2025 a B+. What went into that rating for you?
Yeah, well, you know, I think kind of it sometimes it's dictated by where you're picking, and sometimes it's kind of dictating how you picked. And it was an interesting draft. You know, I think in the first round, you know, it was a year where there were a lot of really big players, the Flames ended up coming out with 2 of the smaller guys, which isn't a bad thing because both of them are incredibly skilled. I think, you know, Cole Reshny might have some of the best hockey sense among players in the draft, among the forwards in the draft, and Colin Potter's probably the best skater in the draft. So, you know, you're getting guys with really projectable tools, which is super helpful. You know, I think that just kind of looking, it was a hard year to give out A's because there were so many teams that had like 3 first round picks, some of them super high in the draft. So it was like, you know, you're kind of almost grading it on a curve. But I think, you know, a B+ is a pretty solid, solid showing for Calgary. You know, I like the Theo Staxelius pick that they got in the second round there. Maceo Phillips is a big bet on upside. I think there's still a lot more to be learned about the player. You know, I think he's got a long way to go, but obviously he has that really great size. He's one of the heaviest players in the draft. So, you kind of move away from drafting the 2 smaller guys by getting a couple of big guys in your next few picks. I also like that pick of Ethan Wittenbach at the a little bit further down. Another guy with some speed, a guy that had a really impressive season in the USHL. Won the Johnny Gaudreau Award, as everybody probably knows now, and certainly, you know, a high character player that I think is going to be, you know, somebody to keep an eye on down the road. I'm sure he's going to play some years in college here, and we'll learn more about him as time progresses. But, you know, I think all in all, with the number of picks that you have, getting 2 first rounders and getting 2 guys that I think have, you know, highly projectable tools that can get them to the NHL, is always a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's dial in a little bit on the actual players the Flames have added and get your kind of expertise and your thoughts on them. And Look, there was a lot of excitement when Cole Reschne was still on the board at number 18 overall, and even more excitement when the Flames made him their first selection on Friday night. This team has been starved for center ice prospects for a long, long time. And here's a guy who had 92 points in the Western League last year, playing down the middle and projects to be a center at the next level. What did you think, a little more in depth on what you thought of the Flames selecting Reschne at number 18?
Yeah, well, I certainly, you know, I think that was a very, you know, fair range for him to go. You know, I had him a little bit higher on my own list, but, you know, kind of expected him to settle into that, you know, 15 to 20 range. So it was a really good spot to get a player like that. I think the biggest thing that I come away with Cole Reschne and the biggest thing I take away from his season last year is that it built over time. He was one of the faster risers. I mean, he kind of came into the year with a lot of hype. You know, he had a you know, pretty good showing at the Lincoln Gretzky Cup, and everybody was kind of excited about that. And then, you know, it was just kind of where is it going to go within this class? Because we knew there were a lot of bigger guys in there. But he played some of his best hockey in the playoffs, and that's really where I think that his draft stock stabilized it as more of a top 20 pick kind of guy. And then he also goes to the under 18 worlds and is a top player for Canada, coming in a little bit late in the tournament after the WHL playoffs, and, you know, making an impact pretty much immediately for that team. I think those were good things. And then on top of that, the interesting thing with Cole Reschne is he's now one of these kids that has decided to go to college out of the CHL and is going to the University of North Dakota. And he was one of the bigger names early on to make that decision. I think for players, particularly like himself, who's not, you know, super tall and needs to get strength, it's going to be a good move for him because North Dakota is definitely a place where they've developed a ton of NHL players, but it's some of that strength training that he needs. It's some of that extra time. It's like, you know, he can play all the games in the world, and that's great, but I think playing fewer games, having more practice time and more time in the weight room is probably going to end up being more beneficial to him than playing a more grueling schedule as it can be in the WHL, which is, you know, no slight on the WHL. It's just a different kind of experience. And for a player like him in particular, who has had a dominant season at his age, you know, at 17 years old, you know, he could potentially be ready for kind of this next step that's now available that wasn't there before. So to me, I think that what they're getting is not just a player that already has some really good skills, but a guy that's going to probably get what he needs in the next step of his career. And then, you know, gives them a little bit of flexibility with how to handle him going forward.
So you talk about him going off to North Dakota, adding some strength, all that type of stuff. What do you see him realistically, Cole Reschne, realistically projecting to at the NHL level? Do you see him as a center at the next level? And do you see him as an impact center at the next level?
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little time to figure that out. I mean, he definitely doesn't have, you know, the prototypical size that you're looking for in centers. I do think that there's some fluidity in terms of, you know, the forward position, how many wings take faceoffs now, how many guys are doing some of the things that a center would normally do. You know, I think that there's some of that. The biggest thing is that he carries the puck a lot. He has the puck a lot. He's going to be around the puck a lot. And that's what you want from your center. You want a guy that's going to be able to drive play, and I think that's what he can do. And so with that, I mean, I think that there's absolutely the possibility that he's kind of a top six center, that a guy that's going to drive play, a guy that's going to make things happen offensively. You know, I think time will tell if he's going to be able to handle some of the defensive elements of the game. He's definitely competitive enough. You know, I think that he has a good compete level. You know, I think the skating's fine and pretty much, you know, he'll do all the things that you need to do. But really, I think the things that stand out for me is just that high-end hockey sense and vision and the ability to make plays, really good hands. And just, you know, I think that's helpful to him. And whether he's a center or a wing, I mean, I think his profile certainly suggests that he's going to be an impact player in a top six role. Okay. I do think that. I think he's got some real pop to him and should be very helpful to helping the team score goals.
That would be music to Flames fans' ears for sure. We're chatting with Chris Peters of Flow Hockey. He's joining us here on Flames Talk on a Monday. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you, Vicks.
Chris, you mentioned it earlier, speed, the name of the game for Cullen Potter, might be the fastest player in the draft. I would throw a vote in from point A to point B. He is the fastest player. Outside of that, what skills do you look at, you see in Potter and go, this is going to be transferable at the NHL level?
Yeah, you know, I think right now the skating is the main one, you know, because he doesn't necessarily have the strength. And I think the skill level is very good, but I think there's still he needs to finish plays a little bit better. And I think we saw that in the college games, but also at the under 18 worlds, where he would create a lot with his feet, but then he kind of needed to get to that next step. The good thing is that he has a foundational skill. Like, having skating as one of your foundational skills is really important. I don't think that the hockey sense is very far behind. I think it's just kind of catching up to his feet a little bit more. And just, you know, because there's so much that he can do with that separating speed, with the ability to beat defenders wide, with the ability to, you know, transition incredibly quickly. You know, and then he does have a really good shot. He's able to, you know, make a lot of plays and different things, but you just want to see him finish a few more of them. You know, he decided to accelerate schooling, went into college a year earlier than he was supposed to. And I was a little critical of that at the beginning, but I think in the end, it may have helped him, because I do think that while he didn't necessarily put up the number of points and different things that kind of give you a lot of inspiration in terms of where to pick a guy, you know, higher in the draft, I think that he did enough to say, yes, I'm still a first round caliber talent. I have this tremendous tool in my skating, and then I can kind of build off of that. So I do think there's going to be some more development time needed for him. You know, I think that his play away from the puck is still going to need to improve. But I mean, I think at the end of the first round, especially in a year where it's a little bit of a shallower year, there aren't many guys with that one tool that you can point to and say, okay, well, in this class, that's pretty much elite. So I'm going to take a swing on that. And I thought that was right at that range, which is kind of where I had projected him most of the second half of the year as a late first round pick. I think it was a solid bet to make.
What does it say about a guy's competitiveness or drive that he would jump to the NCAA early? It might sacrifice the production a little bit, might not be as flashy as maybe playing for the national team development program or playing in a junior program. What's it say about Potter that he wanted to accelerate things to put himself in a better position down the road?
Yeah, well, I think it's it's competence for sure. I mean, I think that's part of it. You know, he was supposed to go to Michigan State. That's where he was committed first. Mm-hmm. They didn't have a spot for him next year. And then he decides to go to Arizona State. And what made that a little bit more interesting, first of all, he was probably he is the biggest recruit that they've ever had at that school. You know, so that was one thing. And so you kind of take on a little bit of that pressure. But they were also going into the NCHC, which is one of the toughest conferences in the country, for the first time last season. So you're not only making the jump to college hockey, you're going in with a very difficult schedule. So, you know, I think that was pretty good. What impressed me most, I think, this season is how he kind of stuck with it. Now, he had some early success, but then there were these lulls kind of throughout the season, and then he kind of started tapering it back up again towards the end of the year. And, you know, basically put himself in a position where he was going to be able to be a first-round draft pick. I mean, I think that, you know, some of the things that, you know, I kind of mentioned, I didn't necessarily think he was ready for that, but I think he proved that he could handle himself, which to me is, you know, definitely a sign of that confidence, but also some of that competitiveness that it's like, hey, there's more here for me to be able to do.
You liked Theo Stokselius at 54th overall. Why is that?
I think it's because of the way he plays. I mean, he's got some real power to his game. He's not, you know, I think that he might not have like the most natural skill, but he's skilled. He's able to score. He had a really productive year this year in the Swedish U20 league, and just he's hard to knock off the puck. And then on top of that, you know, he goes in Sweden, really, until they ran into Canada at the gold medal game of the World Under 18 Championship, really was the best team in the tournament, and he was a big part of that. You know, he was kind of making a lot of plays down low. He's more physically advanced, but he's also, you know, showing that ability to play with top players. And I think he just has a work ethic to him. You see him on the ice, he's not going to shy away from the physical stuff. He's going to protect pucks well. He's going to be really difficult to knock off of it. And I think that there's, you know, like I said, he's not the most refined, skilled player, but I think there's a foundation there that you can kind of build off of. And it looks like, you know, he has the hockey sense. He has the compete to be able to find a role. Now, that role is more than likely going to be down the lineup. I don't think he's necessarily going to be like this top six guy or anything like that. But I think having somebody with some size, with some drive, and maybe some power to him, that's where, you know, those kinds of picks in the middle rounds, or the early mid rounds, or early day two picks, those are what you hope you can get out of it, is somebody that's going to, you know, fit into an everyday role on your team. And I think he has that projectable skill set.
Based on your skill assessment of him, is he a center long term, or is he a guy that you see maybe being more of a winger at the pro level?
Yeah, you know what? I think we'll have to see. I think the hockey sense is definitely going to have to come along a bit more for him to be a center. Obviously, having some of those things where, you know, he does have some physical drive to him. He does, protect pucks well. I think that gives him an opportunity to be a center. It's always tough to say with some of those guys with, you're not quite sure about the hockey sense, but they do have that compete level. Sometimes they can make up for it that way. So, I think that there's absolutely a possibility for him to do that and stay at the center position. I think he's definitely going to need some more development. We'll see kind of how he progresses over time in Sweden as well.
The Flames went to the U.S. National Team Development Program at 80th overall. What comes to mind outside the – well, actually, bring the obvious to me too, if you don't mind. But Maceo Phillips, what pops to mind with him?
I mean, just the size, really. At this point, that's kind of all there is. I think he has the ability to move pucks. He's got mobility as well. Like he can move pretty well for a big guy. He's one of the heaviest players in the draft. But right now, it's a bet on size. I think the hockey sense is pretty far behind, and I also think that there are some things that he's going to have to clean up in terms of his reads and other things like that. But when you have the size that he does have, and he does have this reach and the ability to defend and those things, I think it's going to be there. But yeah, I mean, it's tough. We've seen actually quite a few of these guys come through the NTDP over the last several years where they're super big. They're really unrefined, and they, even though they've developed more strength, they've developed a little bit more to their game, there's still a long way to go. And that's what I think there is with Maceo. I like the player, in terms of where he can kind of get to. But as of right now, I think, he did not make my list. It's just one of those guys that I think is got a long way to go. But it'll be fascinating to see. And as we saw in this draft, lots and lots of teams were betting on size.
You mentioned earlier Ethan Wittenbach, the inaugural winner of the Gaudreau Award, and some synergy there, him being drafted by Calgary. But there's more than just sentiment in that pick, I would imagine, over a point per game in the USHL with Sioux Falls.
Yeah, not only just over a point per game, but that was his first season of junior hockey. Mm-hmm. So he's a little bit older in terms of starting junior hockey. He turned 18 in February, but still, a lot of guys are coming into the league that are, guys that are going to be drafted are coming in at 16. Well, he comes in at 17 and he immediately makes an impact after playing, basically midget AAA before that. So, I think that's always tough to jump from that level to the USHL. Sometimes can be feel bigger than most of the other ones that you make. But, he came in, he scored 24 goals. It's a very difficult league to score goals in. He made Sioux Falls a much more competitive team. I think that, you hear about the character, you hear about the competitiveness and the drive the kid has. And he really, showed up and showed out throughout the season. I think that was really impressive. And he's also going to be going to Quinnipiac, which is, a place where they've definitely developed solid two-way players, guys that can kind of make the most of, whatever talent they have. And really, I think for him, the fact that he also has some speed to him and the ability to make the plays that he did this year, for a mid-round guy, even though he's a little bit on the smaller side, he still showed a lot. And I think seeing those guys that make that transition to junior hockey the way that he did, it kind of tells you that there's still quite a bit there to tap into. Because if he made that jump that seamlessly, I'm really excited to see what happens when he goes USHL to college as well.
Aiden Lang at 176 overall to Calgary. He seemed to play everywhere, whether it's St. Andrews up here. He had a couple of games with Green Bay in the USHL, ended the season with the Brampton Steelheads at a point per game, 13 points in 13 games. Did you get a chance to see him at all when he came through Green Bay, or did you get a chance to scout him at all via video this season?
Not a whole lot. Didn't spend a lot of time on the St. Andrews guys this year, but he's definitely one that you hear about from the college guys. And I think that there's some excitement in terms of his athletic toolkit as well and kind of the different things that he did. And the fact that when he goes from, you think about the prep school jump, even to the OHL jump, and he averaged about a point per game for Brampton, I think that was definitely encouraging. Don't have a ton of notes on him, but I do know, just from asking around about him that, it's like, hey, those guys that make that transition, again, you're just kind of like, wow, you're impressed by it because it is difficult to make it, especially in the middle of the season. We saw the same thing with the guy like Will Horkoff, who transitioned from the NTDP to college in mid-season, and it helped him probably get into the first round with how he made that transition. So a lot of exciting things there, but I know that Harvard is definitely very excited about Aiden Lane as well.
I don't know if you heard this story, but the Flames entered the draft with 1 7th-round pick. Two scouts were fighting over who that pick would be. So Craig Conroy went out and grabbed a second seventh rounder. So they end up with Jakob Leander and Russian Yatmanvenko. I'm just curious, from your perspective, what does it say that a GM goes out and gets an additional pick to keep two scouts from fighting over who they were going to select?
Honestly, I think it's good staff management. You know, I think from that point, and really, I think it's also, when you see your scouts be passionate about players, I think it does speak to general managers, because these guys obviously are the ones putting in the work the whole year. And I don't have any notes on either of these players. So, you know, those are the guys that know them backwards and forwards, right? So, you know, that's the thing where you say, you know, hey, if you really believe in this guy and you're that sold on it, we'll go ahead and spend an asset to make sure you guys are both happy and that we have these guys in there. And then, you know, those two scouts are going to have this internal competition for the rest of time, because probably one or neither of those players is getting a contract. So we'll see where that goes. But you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. But I think that's a lot of respect from Craig Conroy to the work that his scouts did. And that, to me, I think is actually, you know, the sign of a GM who really cares about the guys that work for him.
Chris, you were live on location at Peacock Theater, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm just wondering your impression of this decentralized draft, and if you see it happening again next year, or if we're going to jump back to a more traditional approach.
Did you hate it as much as everybody else?
Yeah, that's the real question.
I hated it more than everyone else.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, I've been to a lot of live drafts. This was by far the worst. It dragged on. It was painful. And the worst part of it all, I think they hit it really well on TV. The amount of empty seats in that place and the lack of energy in the building was absolutely abhorrent. And I think that the NHL knows, they knew going in it was going to be bad. And I'll tell you what, if Gary doesn't put his foot down, I'll just have to travel to all 32 teams and, you know, find a way to make them not vote for doing this. I did kind of poll a lot of people in NHL circles. It seems like right now, like, Steve Yzerman's the only one that was like, that was awesome. unfortunately, I know why. But to me, the thing is that NHL GMs, scouts, teams, all of them, they have to understand something. The draft, as much as it is about their work, it's not about them. It's about the players. The players that were there, while I think they are happy to be drafted, they were robbed of the experience that most of the other players have gotten, COVID year excluded. So to me, I think it's about the players and it's about the fans, and neither were served with what we saw this weekend. So it better change back to the way it was, because the draft has always been something the NHL has done extremely well.
Yep.
And for a league that doesn't usually get credit for doing things well, I think they should probably bring that one back.
Chris, I've got one more for you, and it's more of an accusation than a question, maybe. What in the world inspired you to drop 2026 NHL rankings 2 days after we just wrapped the 2025 edition?
Page views, I guess. I think that's probably...
Touché, you no, win this I round.
Mean, No. I mean, obviously, there's a lot to be said. I think that when we get to this stage, I don't have a full book on the entire 2026 class. But I've seen a lot of the top guys already, and you can kind of tell typically who those guys are going to be. So, you know, I think obviously Gavin McKenna is the easy one, but there's a lot of other exciting players that are going to be there as well. And I'm sure there will be guys like Ivan Rabkin this year, who was on my top 10 that didn't get drafted until, you know, later in day two. So, you know, that's going to happen with some of those guys, and there'll be plenty that rise and fall as we go on. But quite frankly, I'm excited to turn the page on 2025 and head over to 2026. It should be a fun year in a lot of ways.
Yeah, what would you say early on, 363-ish days away from actual 2026 draft day, what outside of McKenna should fans be excited about in this group?
Well, I think, you know, the very top, in the same way, I don't have a great book on the depth, but, you know, from what I've talked to guys that have been looking at it, they think it's a little more similar to this year when it comes to depth, which is to say not very deep. And so the very top is exciting because you've got Keaton Verhoef, who is a 6'4" defenseman at 17 years old, who scored 21 goals this year for the Victoria Royals. He's also going with Cole Reschne to North Dakota next year, accelerating, going there a year early. He'll be one of the youngest players in the draft, but he's probably coming into that season as the number one defenseman for next year. There's also Ivar Stenberg, who his older brother Otto was drafted late in the first round by the Blues, but Ivar is he's a dynamo. Really physical, fast. He makes plays. He scores goals. He ended up playing for Frölunda at the end of last season in the playoffs, and was had 6 points in 12 games. He was playing top 6 minutes in the playoffs last year, and he was considering going to the NCAA because the pro team wasn't giving him a shot. So he gets in there and he makes the most of it. And then there's also Viggo Björk, who's a smaller player, 5'9" player, but he scored more points in Sweden's top U20 league than anyone in history, and he did it at 16 years old. So he basically set the record for his own age group, but then set the record for the whole league. And no U17 player was in 34 points of them in terms of the amount that they scored in that league. So that's a really intriguing player as well. Another guy out of Djurgårdens, after we saw a couple of their guys go in the first round this year.
Hey, Chris, that was awesome. I know it's been a whirlwind for you the last few days, so appreciate you taking some time with us this afternoon, breaking down the Flames draft class. What can you've already got your 2026 draft class out on Flow Hockey right now. What else can we expect from you, or what else can we see from you over at Flow Hockey, my friend?
Yeah, well, hopefully we'll be taking a little bit of a break here, but it's been a lot of fun. We've got our podcast that we've been doing with Cam Robinson from Elite Prospects called Called Up. We'll have one more show before we take a little summer hiatus. And then we've got a lot of exciting things going on at Flow Hockey as well. We're the home of the AHL streaming, and also announced earlier this month that the QMJHL will also be on Flow Hockey. So a lot of great games, so definitely hope folks subscribe. There's been a lot of traction and movement moving into Canada and getting a lot of that. So it's been a lot of fun for me to kind of be a part of it on that side of things. But we'll always have prospect coverage. It's always going to be the anchor of what we do. So got lots to come, and a lot of college previews and everything else that we have, junior hockey. So hopefully a lot more fun to come on Flow Hockey.
Hey, great stuff, Chris. Appreciate the time. Be well. We'll talk again soon. Hey.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Great to be with you.
That is Chris Peters. He is the prospects expert and content manager over at Flow Hockey. You can get him on Twitter at Chris M. Peters. And he joins us to wrap up the hour. He joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.